Chapter 6. Feet and Sprouts. In the cottage, the beds were airing, the floors had been swept, and the log basket was full. On the kitchen table, the inventory was laid out. So many spoons, so many pans, so many dishes, all lined up in the dingy light. Tiffany packed some of the cheeses, though. She'd made them, after all. The loom was silent in its room. It looked like the bones of some dead animal, but under the big chair was the package Miss Treason had mentioned, wrapped in black paper. Inside it was a cloak woven of brown wool, so dark that it was almost black. It looked warm. That was it, then. Time to go. If she lay down and put her ear to a mouse hole, she could hear widespread snoring coming from the cellar. The Feagles believed that after a really good funeral, everyone should be lying down. It wasn't a good idea to wake them. They'd find her. They always did. Was that everything? Oh, no, not quite. She took down the Unexpurgated Dictionary and Chaffinch's Mythology, with the Dacne of the Sneesos in it, and went to tuck them into a bag under the cheeses. As she did so, the pages flipped like cards and several things dropped out onto the stone floor. Some of them were faded old letters which she tucked back inside for now. There was also the Boffo catalogue. The cover had a grinning clown on it and the words, "The Boffo Novelty and Joke Company. Guffaws, jokes, chuckles, japes galore. If it's a laugh, it's a boffo. Be the life of the party with our novelty gift pack. Special offer this month, half price off red noses." Yes, you could spend years trying to be a witch, or you could spend a lot of money with Mr. Boffo and be one as soon as the postman arrived. Fascinated, Tiffany turned the pages. There were skulls, glow-in-the-dark $8 extra, and fake ears, and pages of hilarious noses, ghastly dangling booger free on noses over $5, and masks, as Boffo would say, galore. Mask number 19, for example, was Wicked Witch Deluxe with mad greasy hair, rotting teeth and hairy warts. Supplied loose, stick them where you like. Miss Treason had obviously stopped short of buying one of these, possibly because the nose looked like a carrot, but probably because the skin was bright green. She could also have bought Scary Witch Hands, $8 a pair with green skin and black fingernails, and Smelly Witch Feet, $9. Tiffany tucked the catalogue back into the book. She couldn't leave it for Anagramma to find, or the secret of Miss Treason's Boffo would be out. And that was it. One life, ended and neatly tidied away. One cottage, clean and empty. One girl, wondering what was going to happen next. Arrangements would be made. Clonk, clank. She didn't move, didn't look around. "I'm not going to be boffoed," she told herself. "There's an explanation for that noise that has nothing to do with Miss Treason. Let's see. I cleaned the fireplace right, and I leaned the poker next to it. But unless you get it just right, it always falls over sooner or later in a sneaky kind of way. That's it. When I turn and look behind me, I'll see that the poker has fallen over and is lying in the grate, and therefore the noise wasn't caused by any kind of ghostly clock at all." She turned around slowly. The poker was lying in the grate. And now, she thought, it would be a good idea to go outside into the fresh air. It's a bit sad and stuffy in here. That's why I want to go out, because it's sad and stuffy. It's not at all because I'm afraid of any imaginary noises. I'm not superstitious. I'm a witch. Witches aren't superstitious. We are what people are superstitious of. I just don't want to stay. I felt safe here when she was alive. It was like sheltering under a huge tree. But I don't think it is safe any more. If the Wintersmith makes the trees shout my name, well, I'll cover my ears. The house feels like it's dying, and I'm going outside. There was no point in locking the door. The local people were nervous enough about going inside, even when Miss Treason was alive. They certainly wouldn't set foot inside now, not until another witch had made the place her own. A weak, runny egg kind of sun was showing through the clouds, and the wind had blown the frost away. But a brief autumn turned to winter quickly up here. From now on, there would always be the smell of snow in the air. Up in the mountains, the winter never ended. Even in the summer, the water in the streams was ice cold from the melting snow. Tiffany sat down on the old stump with her ancient suitcase and a sack and waited for the arrangements. Anagramma would be here pretty soon, you could bet on that. The cottage already looked abandoned. It seemed like it was her birthday. The thought pushed itself to the front. Yes, it would be today. Death had got it right. The one big day in the year that was totally hers, and she'd forgotten about it all in the excitement. And now it was already two-thirds over. Had she ever told Petulia and the others when her birthday was? She couldn't remember. 13 years old. But she'd been thinking of herself as nearly 13 for months now. Pretty soon she'd be nearly 14. She was just about to enjoy a bit of self-pity when there was a stealthy rustling behind her. She turned so quickly that Horace the Cheese leapt backward. "Oh, it's you," said Tiffany. "Where have you been, you naughty cheese?" "I was worried sick." Horace looked ashamed, but it was quite hard to see how he managed it. "Are you going to come with me?" she asked. Horace was immediately surrounded by a feeling of yesness. "All right. You must get in the sack." Tiffany opened it, but Horace backed away. "Well, if you are going to be a naughty cheat," she began and stopped. Her hand was itching. She looked up at the Wintersmith. It had to be him. At first he was just swirling snow in the air, but as he strode across the clearing, he seemed to come together, become human, become a young man with a cloak billowing out behind him and snow on his hair and shoulders. He wasn't transparent this time, not entirely, but something like ripples ran across him, and Tiffany thought she could see the trees behind him like shadows. She took a few hurried steps backward, but the Wintersmith was crossing the dead grass with the speed of a skater. She could turn and run, but that would mean she was, well, turning and running, and why should she do that? She hadn't been the one scribbling on people's windows. What should she say? What should she say? "Now, I really appreciated you finding my necklace," she said, backing away again, "and the snowflakes and roses were really very... it was very sweet. But I don't think that we... well, you're made of cold and I'm not. I'm a human made of... human stuff." "You must be her," said the Wintersmith. "You were in the dance, and now you are here in my winter." The voice wasn't right. It sounded fake, somehow, as if the Wintersmith had been taught to say the sound of words without understanding what they were. "I'm a her," she said uncertainly. "I don't know about must be. Please, I'm really sorry about the dance. I didn't mean to. It just seemed so..." He still got the same purple-grey eyes, she noticed. Purple-grey, in a face sculpted from freezing fog. A handsome face, too. "Look, I never meant to make you think," she began. "Meant," said the Wintersmith, looking astonished. "But we don't mean. We are." "What do you mean?" "Crivens!" "Oh, no," muttered Tiffany, as feagles erupted from the grass. The feagles didn't know the meaning of the word fear. Sometimes Tiffany wished they'd read a dictionary. They fought like tigers, they fought like demons, they fought like giants. What they didn't do was fight like something with more than a spoonful of brain. They attacked the Wintersmith with swords, heads, and feet, and the fact that everything went through him, as if he were a shadow, didn't seem to bother them. If a feagle aimed a boot at a misty leg and ended up kicking himself in his own head, then it had been a good result. The Wintersmith ignored them, like a man paying no attention to butterflies. "Where is your power? Why are you dressed like this?" the Wintersmith demanded. "This is not as it should be." He stepped forward and grabbed Tiffany's wrist hard, much harder than a ghostly hand should be able to do. "It is wrong," he shouted. Above the clearing, the clouds were moving fast. Tiffany tried to pull away. "Let me go." "You are her," the Wintersmith shouted, pulling her toward him. Tiffany hadn't known where the shout came from, but the slap came from her hand, thinking for itself. It caught the figure on the cheek so hard that for a moment the face blurred as if she'd smeared a painting. "Don't come near me! Don't touch me!" she screamed. There was a flicker behind the Wintersmith. Tiffany couldn't see it clearly because of the icy haze and her own anger and terror, but something blurred and dark was moving toward them across the clearing, wavering and distorted, like a figure seen through ice. It loomed behind the transparent figure for one dark moment, and then became Granny Weatherwax, in the same space as the Wintersmith, inside him. He screamed for a second and exploded into a mist. Granny stumbled forward, blinking. "There, "It'll take a while to get the taste of that out of my head," she said. "Shut your mouth, girl. Something might fly into it." Tiffany shut her mouth. Something might fly into it.
What did you do to him? She managed.
It, snapped Granny, rubbing her forehead. It's an it, not a he. An it that thinks it's a he. Now give me your necklace.
What? But it's mine.
Do you think I want an argument? Granny Weatherwax demanded. Does it say on my face I want an argument? Give it to me now. Don't you dare defy me.
I won't just...
Granny Weatherwax lowered her voice and, in a piercing hiss, much worse than a scream, said, It's how it finds you. Do you want it to find you again? It's just a fog now. How solid do you think it will become? Tiffany thought about that strange face, not moving like a real one should, and that strange voice, putting words together as if they were bricks. She undid the little silver clasp and held up the necklace. It's just boffo, she told herself. Every stick is a wand. Every puddle is a crystal ball. This is just a thing. I don't need it to be me. Yes, I do. You must give it to me, said Granny softly. I can't take it. She held out her hand, palm up. Tiffany dropped the horse into it and tried not to see Granny Weatherwax's fingers as a closing claw. Very well, said Granny, satisfied. Now we must go.
You were watching me, said Tiffany sullenly.
All morning. You could have seen me if you'd thought to look, said Granny. But you didn't do a bad job at the burial, I'll say that.
I did a good job.
That's what I said.
No,
said Tiffany, still trembling. You didn't. I've never held with skulls and such like, said Granny, ignoring this. Artificial ones, at any rate. But Miss Treason... She stopped, and Tiffany saw her stare at the treetops.
Is that him again? She asked.
No, said Granny, as if this was something to be disappointed about. No, that's young Miss Hawkin, and Mrs. Lettuce Earwig. Dinning about, I see. And Miss Treason hardly cooled down, she sniffed. Some people might have had the common decency not to snatch. The two broomsticks landed a little way off. Anagramma looked nervous. Mrs. Earwig looked like she always did, tall, pale, very well dressed, wearing lots of occult jewellery, and an expression that said you were slightly annoying her, but she was being gracious enough not to let it show. And she always looked at Tiffany, when she ever bothered to look at her at all, as if Tiffany were some kind of strange creature that she didn't quite understand. Mrs. Earwig was always polite to Granny, in a formal and chilly way. It made Granny Weatherwax mad, but that was the way of witches. When they really disliked one another, they were as polite as duchesses. As the other two approached, Granny bowed low and removed her hat. Mrs. Earwig did the same thing, only the bow was a little lower. Tiffany saw Granny glance up and then bow lower still by about an inch. Mrs. Earwig managed to go half an inch farther down. Tiffany and Anagramma exchanged a hopeless glance over the straining backs. Sometimes this sort of thing could go on for hours. Granny Weatherwax gave a grunt and straightened up. So did Mrs. Earwig, red in the face. "Blessings be upon our meeting," said Granny in a calm voice. Tiffany winced. This was a declaration of hostilities. Yelling and prodding with the fingers was perfectly ordinary witch arguing, but speaking carefully and calmly was open warfare.
"How kind of you to greet us," said Mrs. Earwig.
"I hopes I sees you in good health."
"Eh, keep well, Miss Weatherwax."
Anagramma shut her eyes. That was a kick in the stomach, by witch standards. "It's Mistress Weatherwax, Mrs. Earwig," said Granny, "as I believes you know."
"Why, yes, of course it is. I'm so sorry."
These vicious blows having been exchanged, Granny went on, "I trust Miss Hawkin will find everything to her liking."
"I'm sure that..."
Mrs. Earwig stared at Tiffany, her face a question. "Tiffany," said Tiffany helpfully.
"Tiffany, of course. What a lovely name. I'm sure that Tiffany has done her very best," said Mrs. Earwig. "However, we shall shrive and consecrate the cottage in case of influences."
I already scrubbed and scrubbed everything, Tiffany thought.
"Influences," said Granny Weatherwax.
Even the Wintersmith could not have managed a voice so icy.
"And disquieting vibrations," said Mrs. Earwig.
"Oh, I know about those," said Tiffany. "It's the loose floorboard in the kitchen. If you tread on it, it makes the dresser wobble."
"There has been talk of a demon,"
said Mrs. Earwig, gravely ignoring this, "and skulls?" "But," Tiffany began, and Granny's hand squeezed her shoulder so hard she stopped. "Deary, deary me," said Granny, still holding on tightly. "Skulls, eh?"
"There are some very disturbing stories," said Mrs. Earwig, watching Tiffany, "of the darkest nature, Mistress Weatherwax. I feel that the people in this steading have been very badly served, indeed. Dark forces have been unleashed."
Tiffany wanted to yell, "No, it was all stories, it was all boffo. She watched over them. She stopped their stupid arguments. She remembered their laws. She scolded their silliness. She couldn't do that if she was just a frail old lady. She had to be a myth." But Granny's grip kept her silent. "Strange forces are certainly at work," said Granny Weatherwax. "I wish you well in your endeavours, Mrs. Earwig, if you will excuse me."
"Of course, Miss Tress Weatherwax. May good stars attend you."
"May the road slow down to meet your feet," said Granny. She stopped gripping Tiffany so hard, but nevertheless almost dragged her around the side of the cottage. The late Miss Treason's broomstick was leaning against the wall. "Tie your stuff on quickly," she commanded. "We must move."
"Is he going to come back?" asked Tiffany, struggling to tie the sack and old suitcase onto the bristles.
"Not yet. Not soon, I think. But it will be looking for you, and it will be stronger. Dangerous to you, I believe, and those around you. You have such a lot to learn. You have such a lot to do."
I thanked him. I tried to be nice to him. Why is he still interested in me?
"Because of the dance," said Granny.
"I'm sorry about that."
"Not good enough. What does a storm know of sorrow? You must make amends. Did you really think that space was left there for you?" "Oh, this is so tangled. How are your feet?"
Tiffany, angry and bewildered, stopped with one leg half over the stick.
"My feet? What about my feet?
Do they itch? What happens when you take your boots off?"
"Nothing. I just see my socks. What have my feet got to do with anything?"
"We shall find out," said Granny infuriatingly. "Now come along."
Tiffany tried to get the stick to rise, but it barely cleared the dead grass. She looked around. The bristles were covered with knack-mack feagles.
"Dinna mind us," said Rob Anybody. "We'll hold on tight. And dinna make it too bumpy, 'cause I feel like the top of my head's come off," said Daft Woolly.
"Do we get meals on this flight?" said Big Jan. "I'm fair bogging for a wee drink."
"I can't take you all," said Tiffany. "I don't even know where I'm going."
Granny Weatherwax glared at the feagles.
"You'll have to walk. We're travelling to Lancre Town. The address is Tir Nanny Og, the square."
"Tir Nanny Og," said Tiffany.
"Isn't that—"
"It means Nanny Og's place," said Granny, as feagles dropped off the broomstick.
"You'll be safe there, well, more or less. But we must make a stop on the way. We must put that necklace as far away from you as we can. And I know how to do that, oh yes."
The Knack-Mack Feagle jogged through the afternoon woods. Local wildlife had found out about feagles, so the fluffy woodland creatures had all dived for their burrows or climbed high into the trees. But after a while, Big Jan called a halt and said,
"There's something tracking us."
"Don't be daft," said Rob Anybody. "There's nothing left in these woods that's mad enough to hunt feagles."
"I know what I'm sensing," said Big Jan stubbornly. "I can feel it in my water. There's something creeping up on us right now."
"Well, I'm not one to argue wi' a man's water," said Rob wearily. "OK, lads, spread oot in a big circle."
Swords drawn, the feagles spread out, but after a few minutes there was a general muttering. There was nothing to see, nothing to hear. A few birds sang at a safe distance. Peace and quiet, unusual in the vicinity of feagles, was everywhere.
"Sorry, Big Jan, but I'm thinking your water is no on the button this time," said Rob Anybody.
It was at this point that Horace the Cheese dropped from a branch onto his head. A lot of water flowed under the big bridge at Lancre, but from up here you could barely see it because of the spray coming from the waterfalls a little farther on, spray that hovered in the freezing air. There was white water all through the deep gorge, and then the river leapt the waterfall like a salmon and hit the plains below like a thunderstorm. From the base of the falls you could follow the river all the way past the chalk, but it moved in wide, lazy curves, and it was quicker to fly in a straight line. Tiffany had flown up it just once, when Miss Level had first brought her into the mountains.
Since then, she'd always taken the long way down, cruising just above the zigzagging coach road. Flying out over the edge of that furious torrent into a sudden drop full of cold, damp air, and then pointing the stick almost straight down, was pretty high on her list of things she never intended to do, ever. Now Granny Weatherwax stood on the bridge, the silver horse in her hand. "It's the only way," she said. "It'll end up at the bottom of the deep sea. Let the Wintersmith look for you there." Tiffany nodded. She wasn't crying, which is not the same as, well, not crying. People walked around not crying all the time and didn't think about it at all. But now she did. She thought, "I'm not crying." It made sense. Of course it made sense. It was all boffo. Every stick is a wand, every puddle is a crystal ball. No thing had any power that you didn't put there. Shambles and skulls and wands were like shovels and knives and spectacles. They were like levers. With a lever, you could lift a big rock, but the lever didn't do any work. "It has to be your choice," said Granny. "I can't make it for you, but it's a small thing, and while you have it, it will be dangerous." "You know, I don't think he wanted to hurt me. He was just upset," said Tiffany.
"Really? Do you want to meet it upset again?"
Tiffany thought about that strange face. There had been the shape of a human there, more or less, but it was as if the Wintersmith had heard of the idea of being human, but hadn't found out how to do it yet. "Do you think he'll harm other people?" she asked.
"He is the Winter Child. It's not all pretty snowflakes, is it?"
Tiffany held out her hand. "Give it back to me, please." Granny handed it over with a shrug. It lay in Tiffany's hand on the strange white scar. It was the first thing she had ever been given that wasn't useful, that wasn't supposed to do something. "I don't need this," she thought. "My power comes from the chalk." But is that what life's going to be like? Nothing that you don't need? "We should tie it to something that's light," she said in a matter-of-fact voice. "Otherwise it'll get caught on the bottom." After some rooting around in the grass near the bridge, she found a stick and wrapped the silver chain around it. It was noon. Tiffany had invented the word noonlight because she liked the sound of it. Anyone could be a witch at midnight, she'd thought, but you'd have to be really good to be a witch by noonlight. Good at being a witch, anyway, she thought now as she walked back onto the bridge. Not good at being a happy person. She threw the necklace off the bridge. She didn't make a big thing of it. It would have been nice to say that the silver horse glittered in the light, seemed to hang in the air for a moment before falling the long fall. Perhaps it did, but Tiffany didn't look.
"Good," said Granny Weatherwax.
"Is it all over now?" said Tiffany.
"No. You dance into a story girl, one that tells itself to the world every year. It's the story about ice and fire, summer and winter. You've made it wrong. You've got to stay to the end and make sure it turns out right. The horse is just buying you time, that's all."
"How much time?"
"I don't know. This hasn't happened before. Time to think, at least. How are your feet?"
The Wintersmith was moving through the world without, in any human sense, moving at all. Wherever winter was, he was too. He was trying to think. He'd never had to do this before, and it hurt. Up until now, humans had just been parts of the world that moved around in strange ways and lit fires. Now he was spinning himself a mind, and everything was new. A human. Made of human stuff. That was what she had said. Human stuff. He had to make himself of human stuff for the beloved. In the chill of morgues and the wreckage of ships, the Wintersmith rode the air searching for human stuff. And what was it? Dirt and water, mostly. Leave a human long enough, and even the water would go, and there'd be nothing but a few handfuls of dust that blew away in the wind. So, since water did not think, all the work was being done by the dust. The Wintersmith was logical because ice was logical. Water was logical. Wind was logical. There were rules. So what a human was all about was the right kind of dust. And, while he was searching for it, he could show her how strong he was. That evening, Tiffany sat on the edge of her new bed, the clouds of sleep rising in her brain like thunderheads, and yawned and stared at her feet. They were pink and had 5 toes each. They were pretty good feet, considering. Normally, when people met you, they'd say things like, "How are you?" Nanny Og had just said, "Come on in, how's your feet?" Suddenly, everyone was interested in her feet. Of course, feet were important, but what did people expect to happen to them? She swung them back and forth on the ends of her legs. They didn't do anything strange, so she got into bed. She hadn't slept properly for 2 nights. She hadn't really understood that until she'd reached Tia Nanny Og, when her brain had started to spin of its own accord. She'd talked to Mrs. Og, but it was hard to remember what about. Voices had banged in her ears. Now, at last, she had nothing to do but sleep. It was a good bed, the best she'd ever slept in. It was the best room she'd ever been in, although she'd been too tired to explore it. Witches didn't go in much for comfort, especially in spare bedrooms, but Tiffany had grown up on an ancient bed where the springs went glowing every time she moved, and with care she could get them to play a tune. This mattress was thick and yielding. She sank into it as if it were very soft, very warm, very slow, quicksand. The trouble is, you can shut your eyes, but you can't shut your mind. As she lay in the dark, it squiggled pictures inside her head of clocks that went clonk-clank, of snowflakes shaped like her, of Miss Treason striding through the nighttime forest, seeking bad people with her yellow thumbnail ready. Myth Treason. She drifted through these scrambled memories into dull whiteness. But it got brighter and took on detail, little areas of black and grey. They began to move gently from side to side. Tiffany opened her eyes and everything became clear. She was standing on a boat. No, a big sailing ship. There was snow on the decks and icicles hung from the rigging. It was sailing in the washing-up water light of dawn, on a silent grey sea full of floating ice and clouds of fog. The rigging creaked, the wind sighed in the sails. There was no one to be seen.